Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome back to Sharp and Hot, episode number 4 with me, your host, Emily Peterson, coming to you on heritageradionetwork.org from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. With me today in the studio is a very special guest storyteller, Davey Rothbart. Davey is the creator and editor of Found Magazine and is in Brooklyn because tomorrow night at the Powerhouse Arena in Brooklyn Heights, he is celebrating the paperback release of his book, My Heart is an Idiot. Welcome, Davey.
Thanks, Emily.
Do you say, my heart is an idiot, or do you say, my heart is an idiot?
My heart is an idiot. Yeah, it's a, it's a relatable phrase. A lot of people have told me, you know, their heart's an idiot too. So I think it's, you know, we've all been there.
I totally understand. When I read it, I was like, yep, I've been there. I've been there. I've been the girl a couple times in the stories.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the book more in a second. But I'm going to warn you that as a fellow storyteller, I'm really good at talking about myself. So I'm going to try to give you as much time as possible to talk. I did an interview once with a celebrity chef named Eric Repair, and it was a total train wreck. And both
Why?
Of us, it was so awkward and it was so terrible. And a friend of mine did his PR and he had released a cookbook. And I was like, she called me and she's like, do you want to interview him? I was like, yeah. And like, I had no idea how to do an interview. And I'd like to say is I've done a lot of research and I've, you know, figured it out. And the answer actually is that I haven't done that. I haven't really learned anything since then.
I think that's cool because okay. I think, you know, there's a certain kind of interview you see on like TV, like these talk shows and late night shows, and it doesn't feel very genuine. It doesn't feel like two people actually interacting. It feels like kind of scripted, like how do you plug this latest movie project or whatever. So I kind of prefer a thing where you're actually having a real conversation and just talking about life and whatever.
Awesome. Okay, so I'm going to start by asking you a personal question that I've had to get off my chest.
Anything.
As I was reading your book, I kept flipping back to your author picture and looking for clues in your story because I really feel like I know you. So
yeah.
I kept flipping. I'm like, I don't know. And there wasn't really anything. But so I went to a photo album, which is a thing that's dying. And I'm really sad about that because I knew exactly where this picture was of this person that I thought you were. So I'm going to show you the picture.
Yes.
And is that you?
Okay. Let me see. Is this me? You're passing me a photo. Is this a found photo?
No. I took that photo. On the back, it says who I think it is. I mean, it says who it actually is.
Right. But you're... So I look like this guy from this random photo that you took 11 years ago,
yeah,
it looks like,
God,
from the date.
11 years ago.
Well, yep. No, it's funny. The guy on the right here looks like a friend of mine back in Ann Arbor, Michigan, my hometown.
Okay.
But this guy that you're pointing to... You know, I mean, we've got the same nose.
Okay, wait, I'll show you.
A lot of people...
This is the one... It's like the same profile. I have a second photograph.
A lot of people say that... and actually, we've got the same Everlast chin strap that I've been rocking since, like, 98.
Yep.
And a lot of people, if they have a friend with the same nose or chin strap, they're like, yeah, you look just like my friend.
Yeah. And I was 35 in this picture. Just kidding, I was 20.
Nice. Well, this one... Yeah, no, he's cool. The thing I never had... Well, what little hair I've ever had, I never had it like gelled up like that. I've never actually used a hair product in my life.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
then that definitely wasn't
because
he relied heavily on hair products. Yeah. Although I was kind of hoping, I mean, I'm happy that it's
friendly looking guy, though.
Yeah,
I'm sure he's a good pal.
I'll tell you a story. We used to call him, there's no chance that he's listening to this. We used to call him GSM because he was the gayest straight man we knew. That's why it says GSM on the back. So I had to come up with a whole story about what I was going to say to you if you flipped it over and said, who's GSM? And I was just going to say I didn't remember.
You needed a cover story.
Yeah, and it was that I don't remember.
Well, this is on the internet. I mean, I'm guessing this is going to be archived.
It will be.
On your website. And,
it will be.
And, I mean, are you still Facebook friends with GSM? Are you still
but
in touch
his first
with him at
name,
all?
Nope, not at all. And his first name is Dave, though. I do remember that much. So
well, somewhere out there...
He doesn't know that he's GSM.
There's somebody who knows... Yeah. A Dave who could potentially be a GSM. They're probably going to send him this link.
With the chin
strap. So you might be in trouble. But he had to know that was his nickname. Yeah, I had to leak out somewhere or another.
We thought we were being the girls thought we were being pretty good about hiding it. So anyway, I'm having you on as my first guest because I like getting non-food world people to come in and talk about food.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of food world people and they kind of all say the same, you know, we all have the same story about food. So I'm kind of curious about your food background. Sure. I asked you if, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good a cook you are. And that's kind of a question that I ask lots and lots of people.
Yeah.
And you said,
I think I said 5. Yeah. And that's, I mean, honestly, if that's just about my cooking abilities, then that's, I'm probably overshooting.
Okay.
But because I'm probably like two or a three in terms of my cooking. But I thought it was kind of about my overall, like, sort of, you know, sensitivity to food or like awareness of like what food, you know. And I'm not like a foodie. I don't like, I'm not a food snob, but there, okay, I do have my food spots like that I love in a lot of, because I travel around so much. So in a lot of cities around the country, and especially, you know, in my hometown in Michigan and also in LA where I live now. So I have my spots, and I have an awareness of food, even if I'm not much of a cook.
So I was going to ask you, because you travel so much, if you find that that gives you insight into better, like, do you seek out good restaurants where you're going, or do you, like,
yeah,
I go to this diner when I'm in Rochester, I eat a garbage plate, or what, you know, like, you know what to get when you're someplace.
Well, my brother Peter has been touring with me doing Found Magazine for the last 10 years, and our favorites are sushi, Thai, and Indian food. So we usually are just asking people, you know, at our events, like, hey, what, you know, so we know where to go that night or the next day, you know, what's the best sushi, Thai, or Indian place? Or we have kind of a fun game that we developed when we were in Sacramento, California, which is just to ask people on the street where the best sushi restaurant is, but people that maybe might not have a good sense for it or might not be sushi fans.
Uh-huh.
And this was born out of this one particular afternoon when we were just kind of, we got into Sacramento a couple hours before our show, and I was like, there's got to be a, this is before smartphones and stuff like this, you know, it was 5 years ago.
Remember that?
And I just leaned out the window, and there was this like loping white dude with, you know, shaved head and just kind of a mean looking dude, you know, but I was like, well, you can't, you know, you might approach anybody. You can't just, you know, not interact with people because of how they look or how you think they might respond. So I was like, hey man, do you know where is there like a great sushi restaurant around here? And he just turned and his eyes got all wide and he was like, sushi? Sushi? And he just shook his head in like kind of disgust. And so anyways, we play the Sacramento game and we always go around towns. But the thing is, people have led us to some great sushi, Thai, and Indian restaurants.
Do you look for the person most unlikely to tell you?
Oh, we look for anybody. Just the first person we see. So sometimes it's someone who looks quite likely.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a profiling type of game, I guess. Like, I mean, who's to say who's the person who's most likely or least likely to know?
It's true.
So we just ask anybody. And we get some funny responses, though. But you know, I did work as a cook for 7 years, mostly as a delivery driver. But I worked at a pizza place in high school and college in Ann Arbor, Michigan, called Bell's Pizza.
Okay. Is it still there?
Is that a live caller?
No, it's my iPad that I don't know how to make the sound go off on, so just ignore me.
Yeah, no, and Bell's Pizza, it's like whenever I go home, it's just so good. And you know, you have those spots back in your hometown that you just can't wait to eat. There's a place called Thompson's Pizza in a nearby town. There's Cosmo Deli, is like a Korean.
These guys are all getting free advertising.
Deli no, I mean, these are like the spots. People that in Ann Arbor know, you know, Fleetwood Diner is like the late night spot. That's it's actually pretty good. You know, there's just a bunch of places that you're just so excited. There's a Thai restaurant in the kind of like in some strip mall on the west side of town. It just doesn't seem like that would be like the place to have an amazing Thai restaurant, but it is.
Right. Yeah. I was always told that if there's an Asian restaurant built into a hotel to eat there.
That's funny. That's the other Thai restaurant in Ann Arbor is Siam Square.
Is it built into
The old Siam is my favorite, but Siam Square is near my folks' house. It's built into this pretty run-down motel that's on the it's like near the interstate, right near my folks' house.
Right,
and it's good.
Yeah,
it's really
there's
good.
A place by us that is I live in kind of a culinary wasteland, but built into the Econo Lodge is a place where people travel from all over, like the tri-state area to come to their dim sum, and we went there and these guys came up to us and we were like one of I don't know, four Anglo couples, and everybody else was like super excited and dressed up like they just come from church. And these guys were like, "Oh, did you Yelp here?" And I didn't realize that was like a verb. Now in the era of smartphones,
right?
Last week I actually talked about when people's food gets delivered, how often they take their phone out and snap a picture of it, like that.
Oh, that's something that you must see that all the way. Well, do your listeners know where you're situated and what the view is from here? Because this is unusual.
I've been
a podcast guest on some other cool shows, like Too Beautiful to Live.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, we have a mutual friend in Luke Burbank.
Yes, he's the man. I've never quite seen a setup like this. Basically, we're in a little recording studio, but the glass, normally you'd be looking into where the engineer might be sitting or something. It's actually looking into the dining area of a pizza joint, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is this place called?
This is called Roberta's, and it's an iconic, what's the word I'm looking for? When they said to me, "Oh, we broadcast from the back of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick," I thought like a pizza place with fluorescent lights and red and white checkered tablecloth.
Yeah,
and it's
right.
Not that at all. This
no,
is like,
it's cool.
It's amazing, and we're actually, I think
that girl is beautiful.
I know
that with her parents.
Sometimes they look at you and they wave.
Yeah,
and
she looked back here twice.
maybe she's looking at you. See,
so
a sequel.
I think she's just like, what are those weird people doing in the window?
well,
we're talking about her, obviously. Is this being pumped into that room right now?
No,
can they hear us?
Okay. No, but sometimes
damn
we can
it
hear them.
Okay. So do your listeners know about how you got into, like, you developed an interest in food in the first place?
So, yes.
Share that story with me, because I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you've shared it too
yeah,
much
no,
already.
Yeah, no, I'll give you the Cliff's Notes version.
Yeah.
I was cooking from the age where I could see over the stove. I had an agreement with my mom that when I could see over the stove, I could start cooking. And all through high school and college, I paid my bills working in bars and restaurants. I dated a wine importer for a long time, and that was really exciting. I got to travel around Germany and France tasting wine. But it was always something that I did as a hobby. And then I got stuck in a job in a cubicle, and my life went completely off the rails, and I hated it. And I had a 3-hour commute in each direction.
Wow.
To go and do nothing, because my
amazing
job was like, I had nothing to do.
Yeah, you would hope you could telecommute if you're going
to
do nothing. You
yeah,
could
no,
at least
I had to be
do
there
it from home.
I had to be there, and so after a few false starts of trying, thinking I was going to be a yoga instructor, or I was going to open a knitting studio.
Sure.
I told my husband, "No, you should know I have multiple. I've gone to a lot of school because I
okay." Multiple husbands?
No.
Oh,
no,
I mean,
multiple
hey,
degrees. Although this morning I did tell him he was my favorite husband ever that I've ever had. So
you did what?
I told him he was the favorite husband.
Oh, that's
favorite
nice
husband. Yeah, I mean, so far, you know,
yeah,
he's the best. And we have a 1-year-old, so we don't get any sleep. So
of
we
course
kind of forgive each other for saying things that are borderline offensive.
What do you? So having a 1-year-old, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but as someone who is passionate about food, what?
Yeah.
What do you cook? Is there ever a point where you've gone too far and created a dish that's too elegant for a 1-year-old to appreciate? Or is he a total foodie now at this
point? He's a total foodie. I've never given him anything that he doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get down in the bottom of the bowl and he hears the spoon scraping,
yeah,
he starts to freak out. Like, he knows that lunch is ending and he loses his shit.
Do you believe, I have a lot of friends that have, you know, parents of, new parents,
mm-hmm,
and they, you know, I guess there's some disagreement about, you know, what this, you know, what food should be off limits, if any food should be off limits. Where do you fall on that spectrum?
The only thing that I haven't given him yet that would be on the off limits spectrum is peanut butter, and that's mm-hmm only because his grandmother is highly allergic.
Right.
So
okay,
because
you keep
there's
it,
like
you
a
don't
like
have much
10%
of it around
chance
anyways.
He
might be.
He may be because there's. So what I'm gonna.
Trait,
I haven't told my pediatrician this yet, but he goes for his 1-year birthday, and I'm gonna bring a little container of peanut butter and give it to him in the office just in case.
So be there on site if something
and
goes wrong.
You know, she's cool. She's like a nurse practitioner, so she's kind of.
Can
I
they
mean,
test? Can they? Is there like a pinprick test
for
peanut
peanuts?
Butter?
I don't
so
know.
That I don't know. You just have to try it. And
I think
see.
I'm just gonna try it. My husband, his boss, and his boss and her wife have a newborn, now he's not a newborn.
Right.
He's much older. But at the time that they were trying to figure out when to introduce peanut butter, she went to the doctor and the doctor said, "Okay, you can try peanut butter now." So she went home and she told the dad, Keith. She said, "Keith, okay, we can try him on peanut butter." And he said, "Try him on peanut butter? I've been giving him peanut butter for a year." So yeah, I mean the you know, and it's even crazier when you're pregnant of like what you can eat. I ate anything I wanted. I ate raw milk cheese. I got a. I had a root canal. I did not drink, which was really hard. and I had a root canal.
Yeah.
And they gave me high-powered Vicodin.
Ooh.
Totally fine. But I couldn't have a glass of red wine with dinner.
Wait, I thought now that the thinking is that you can be pregnant and have and drink.
You can.
Or that it's, like, good to.
After the first trimester, everyone is kind of starting to soften their hardline approach.
Yeah, you don't get wasted, but a glass, like, you know, every hour is cool.
The truest thing that I've heard is that if you tell women they can have one glass of wine, most of them, myself included, are going to have three.
Right.
So, and they're not, I don't think they're comfortable telling them that it's okay to have three. By giving permission, not to. So, when you were a kid, did your parents cook?
Yeah. Some. My mom would make pancakes in the shape of fish.
Okay.
So they're called fish pancakes. It was kind of cute. She'd take the spatula and, like, turn them into fish. That was pretty awesome. We were kind of on our own, but she did make food sometimes. We kind of fended for ourselves. So, I mean, I did learn at an early age how to cook certain foods, bagels, you know, toast them, I guess it's called. Yeah. cereal. Let's see, what else was I making? Sandwiches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that like a sense of pride? Like, I make a mean sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah. I still have a sense of pride about my sandwiches.
That's awesome. I made a really good one the other day with eggplant and hummus. It was really good.
Now here's a question I have for you. Because I am not much of a cook, as you know. I'm really good at having, my favorite, restaurants on phone numbers memorized.
Okay.
Yeah, having my favorite dish. So it's a form of cooking. You know, I mean, it's collaborative with the chefs at the restaurant.
Do they know that it's collaborative?
Well, I mean, I think they respect my appreciation for their cooking.
Okay. Okay.
And so, but my question for you is, you know, what are some simple dishes that you could teach me how to make? We don't have a kitchen set in front of us, but like. Tell me, I like most foods. Mm-hmm. I've really gotten into asparagus and Brussels sprouts recently. Those are damn good. Mm-hmm. But, like, what are just a few? And I'm also trying to eat better because I eat pretty horribly, especially when I'm traveling. You know, it's just hard to, you know, find good stuff. And I, what can you teach me, like, one or two dishes that I could make and just tell me how to do it and that I wouldn't have thought of, like, a snack or actually, like, an actual meal?
Sure.
That's.
Do you want something that you can kind of put together on the go, or something that you could make if you had a kitchen?
Just at home. At home. Something I have a kitchen, but something I could like shop for and like stock my. You know, I guess I like getting a lot of groceries, but it's always stuff like bananas and like hummus and carrots. You know, just stuff that I can like. I guess that I don't. There's no cooking involved.
So take your carrots.
But also my limit to like my cooking aspirations are limited to like something I can make in like 5 minutes.
Sure.
Like a sandwich. You know.
Yeah. Okay. So take your carrots.
Yeah.
And some Brussels sprouts. And a couple of, like, an eggplant.
This is where we're starting.
Yeah.
And hopefully I represent at least some percentage, small percentage of your listeners.
I'm fairly certain you represent all of my listeners. So okay, there's no such thing as a dumb question.
Like, I don't even know how to find Brussels sprouts at the, I've eaten them on sandwiches and stuff before. They're good. But where are they, like, at the grocery store? And what do they come in, like a bag or?
It depends on your grocery store. Yeah. Sometimes they come in, like, a paper pint container, like a cup with that's stuffed with the Brussels sprouts and then a piece of plastic on top of the rubber band snapped around it.
Okay, and those are they're really healthy, right?
They're super healthy.
Okay, good. I'm trying to eat healthier.
This is the best time of year to go to the farmer's market. So if there's any farmer's market.
Yeah, there's one right near my house in downtown.
They will have Brussels sprouts.
Echo Park, LA. Yes. All right,
in LA,
cool.
They probably have Brussels sprouts in LA.
Okay. Well, I can find out at the supermarket if nothing else.
Just don't get them
frozen. What area? Just in where the vegetables are?
Where the vegetables are.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So you cut them in half if they're big. If they're small, just leave them whole. Baby carrots? Are you buying baby
I can ask
carrots?
That guy in Sacramento that we saw on the street where the Brussels sprouts are in the grocery store. I was like, Brussels sprouts? Brussels sprouts?
Who eats Brussels sprouts? Okay. Anyway. Cut them in a bite-sized piece. Or cut them in half. If you have baby carrots, put those in a bowl with your cut-up Brussels sprouts. If you find a long, skinny Japanese eggplant, they're like, instead of being the big, fat Italian eggplant, they're long and skinny.
What color are they?
Purple or white. You'll find them at the farmer's market for sure.
Okay.
Cut them up. Put them into a bowl. Toss them with olive oil, salt, and pepper.
Ooh.
Dump them onto a cookie sheet.
Yes.
Spread them into a single layer.
Okay.
Stick them in the oven at 475 for 10 minutes. Done.
Wow.
I was trying to be.
That there sounds. Okay, so just carrots, Brussels sprouts, and some.
Eggplant.
And some eggplants.
Potatoes would work.
Okay.
Any vegetable that you like that's super fresh. Here's the rule of thumb. Instead of giving you a second dish, I'll give you a dish and a rule.
Okay, gotcha.
Buy the freshest stuff you can find.
Okay.
So at the farmer's market is best.
Right.
Really good bread, really good eggs, if you start with really fresh ingredients, your food's automatically going to taste better because it didn't sit in a truck for, you know, 20 months or whatever.
So
we need to take a station break. Will you stick around and answer a listener question that I picked out because I think it's sort of particular to what you and I do for a living?
Sure, I'd love it.
Okay, cool.
I'll be here.
This one's called Thank You by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more Sharp and Hot. The following is an actor reading an actual customer email from Heritage Foods USA.
My family and I enjoyed the Heritage turkey. It was far superior to the regular mass-produced turkeys in terms of flavor and texture. Absolutely delicious and worth the difference in price. We will never go back to the regular turkeys. It made our holidays more enjoyable. Thank you, Heritage Foods USA.
Heritage Foods USA hopes you had a great holiday season. For more specials on pork, beef, and other meats, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
All right, we're back on Sharp and Hot. This is Chef Emily Peterson here with Davey Rothbart. I'm going to play a listener question. The way that this show works is that I have listeners call in and ask questions on the voicemail or Facebook or tweet them. And then I answer them. And so it's anonymous so people can ask questions without feeling any pressure to sound like they know more than they do.
Right, but you'll tell me who they are.
Afterwards, okay. Absolutely, I will divulge their identity.
Okay, great.
Hi, Chef Emily. This is Joe. I'm calling from Southampton. You know, I've been giving a lot of thought to starting my own hot sauce company. Getting sick of my job. It's one of those times in my life where I want to change a pace, and my friends always say to me, you know, you make the best hot sauces. You make the best hot sauces. You should just make these and sell these. I'd buy it. And so, you know, that to me says, like, maybe I got something here. So anyway, my question is, you know, any pointers on how to get the ball rolling and starting a hot sauce business? Thanks, guys.
So I get asked this question a lot.
Yeah.
Because I jumped ship. I left a master's degree and a salary and vacation time and all that.
Sure.
To do something that's pretty much the opposite of that.
Right.
So Joe's calling to ask about jumping ships to start a hot sauce business, which I can answer his question from sort of the culinary and business end of, but I'm wondering, as another sort of hustler, entrepreneur, what would you tell someone who's like, I want to quit my job and start a company?
Do it. No, I mean, I think, you know, we only live once. I mean, there's security and stability in the 9-to-5 job, and that's has its advantages for sure. But, you know, you want to spend your time doing something that you really love and are passionate about. Now, you know, I think people don't always realize that, you know, when you're a self-employed artist or writer, filmmaker, whatever it is, you know, you're also kind of, you're managing a small business. And, you know, some, for example, Found Magazine that I started 12 years ago with some friends, you know, we, you know, the fun part is making the magazine and, you know, and sharing it with people during our Found live shows. But the, you know, but a lot of the time goes into, you know, corresponding with bookstores and, you know, advertisers or whoever it is, and so you're essentially kind of running a small business. So you don't the tasks don't always necessarily match, you know, where the part of it where your passion lies.
At the same time, it's
way easier to do those things, to do the stuff that if you were doing them, you know, for an hourly wage or at some even a salary, you know, at some other business. You'd be completely bored. But when you're doing it for your own project, it's easy to just have that, you know, that desire and that motor to work round the clock on it. So, I mean, I love DIY projects. I mean, everything I do is just kind of my own, you know, my own thing. I mean, it's, I think I work more hours than I envy my friends who have 9-to-5 jobs, and they're always like planning a vacation or they're always going to a music festival for a weekend. And I'm just like, it's Friday or Saturday night and they're like telling me there's some party and I'm at home working on my projects. But like, you know, ultimately, it's more fun. I feel more satisfied. It's really nourishing when people, you know, like the work that you're doing. You know, it means for Joe, who, you know, the first, you know, few responses he gets from customers who are just raving about his hot sauce, I mean, that's going to mean more to him than years spent at a job that just didn't mean that much to him. So it's a balance. It's a trade-off. You know, people have to be prepared for the financial challenges and the you know, pushing their energy and to its like uttermost reserve. But I think it's worth it personally.
I tell everybody, run away, join the circus.
Yeah,
do it.
Yeah.
When I rode the train here today, I was sitting, and I was surrounded by five people who are all wearing pinstripe suits.
Uh huh.
And they were talking about. I was genuinely trying to understand what they did,
yeah.
And I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, so we do the 600s, and then we pass that over to so-and-so, and he does whatever he can do with it, and then they're going to throw it back to us. And for, like, 8 minutes solid, I listened to them, and I could not tell you what industry they were in.
Right,
and
right.
I go through moments, and I'm curious to know if you do the same thing, where I think I need to get, like, a real job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sometimes do. Well, I think, I mean, part of it, too, is it's easy when you don't have kids, as I don't.
I thought it would change, but it's even more powerful because I don't want my kid to think
you don't want to model. Well,
she jumped ship.
Yeah, my dad worked a job that he worked at the University of Michigan, kind of in charge of like janitorial and repair for this building on campus, and he really didn't like the job that much. He liked the people he worked with, but he didn't like the job, and I know he did it to sacrifice, you know, so that me and my brothers would have opportunities and get to do the stuff we wanted to do.
Did you get to go to college for free?
No, not for free, but in state at Michigan is pretty,
it's pretty
reasonable. And so I feel like he gave us those opportunities so that we wouldn't take that path, you know? And so, so sometimes, you know, I think I want to have a family one day and maybe I would, you know, for example, I enjoy teaching and I think I could imagine getting a job as a professor at a university and teaching writing, teaching filmmaking. I don't know. That's down the road, and even that doesn't feel like the same as, you know, an office job or anything else.
Yeah, I feel like it's very permanent to take a job. And I was a teacher for 4 years in the public school system, so there's a sense of security in that you have something to do every day, and then there's also the like, God, I have something to do every day.
Yeah, and I don't think there's even one blanket answer to whether or not to do it. For example. You know, I have friends who they're really creative, you know, people. They're really talented people, but they have really good jobs, and so they find a way. They don't their creative interests are not marginalized. They actually have, you know, rigorous, you know, they're musicians, or they're filmmakers, but they really do it, you know, but they just also have this like other job on the side. Maybe it's a flexible job. Maybe it's like their web developer or something where they can. You know, if they want to go on tour for 3 weeks, they can,
right.
You know. So I think there's another approach, which is not to, you know, necessarily quit your job and run away from everything and just try to do everything. I mean, I respect when people do that. My friend Jacob, super talented musician in San Francisco, he quit this really nice job at this internet company because he could really focus on his music. He felt like he just wasn't quite being as active as he would be if he wasn't working full-time, you know, at an office job.
Right.
So he moved into his van in San Francisco. He's got a nice studio space where he practices with his band, and he sleeps there sometimes too. But, you know, he's like really way more dedicated to his music now, and his motor for it is higher, and he's playing more and traveling more with it. And so it's like, you know, sometimes there's something to be said for, you know, just kind of going there and doing everything. But I also think there's another path, which is finding a balance and finding a way to, you know, so Joe, for example, you know, he could, you know, starting a hot sauce company doesn't mean you have to quit your job. I mean, that's something that he could do 20 hours a week on the side. Maybe,
right.
Maybe he asks his job, hey, can I go from 5 days to four? Can I go from five to three? You know,
right.
Maybe there's some way to meet halfway. I don't know. I don't think there's one answer, but.
I think what you said earlier too, being prepared to work all the time, because that's the. Yeah. I think that's the thing that I wasn't quite prepared for.
Yeah.
But I think I might also be addicted to work.
It's so. Well, and I am too. But it's fun. It's fun when you're working on your own.
Yeah.
Stuff and the rewards are just so much more meaningful.
I guess it's true. What is the expression? If you do what you love, you'll never work another day. We need that on the poster up here on the wall.
I think that's good advice.
So one of the other things that I have the listeners do is call in and tell me their answers to the question of the week.
Right.
Last week I posed the question, what is your earliest food memory? Mm. And we got this from Rebecca. And then I'm going to ask you to tell yours.
Sure.
And then I'll ask you to tell everybody where they can find you. And then we got to go because somebody else needs a studio and they're about to kick us out.
Sounds good.
Hey, Chef Emily. This is Rebecca from Manhattan. My earliest food memory is probably watching my mom bake in the kitchen and then deciding that I needed to learn how to practice my cooking as well, or my mixing for that matter, and decided to mix the sugar and the salt. And my mom only found out when she went to put sugar in her coffee and it tasted like salt. needless to say, I wasn't quite aware what was going on at that time, but I've now learned the difference between sugar and salt, and it's worked out very well for me. Thanks so much.
Everyone's got that story.
Yeah,
everyone's got
yeah.
to mix up the sugar and salt story
with yeah.
sugar cookies. What's yours?
Well, it may have to do with a prank I played on my older brother. He's 3 years and 1 day older than me, and we had our share of sibling rivalries, and my mom would make these kind of like chocolate protein milks for us mm-hmm. every morning. I think she'd make them the night before, and that was like our thing. We would drink in the morning, have some kind of, I don't know what, tiger's milk, or I don't even know what it's called, but healthy morning drink, our chocolate milk, and his was the green Tupperware cup. Mine was the pink one. But one night we just had this awful row, and I was like, I gotta get him. I had this sort of burst of inspiration. My parents had a liquor cabinet. They drank like maybe once a year.
Okay.
And so it was just these dusty old bottles beneath the record player, and I pulled out a giant thing of rum. I think it was rum or brandy, and I just like emptied half of my brother's chocolate milk, filled it with that rum, and then. I mean, it could have actually been dangerous. Like, it was probably a fair amount. I was like 4.
Oh my god!
Yeah, maybe five. I knew that was like yucky stuff.
Yeah,
and that it would make his thing taste weird.
Right.
But I mean, it was probably a fair amount of rum, and he was like 7 or 8. The next day, I remember. He really didn't get that far into it. He drank like a few gulps, and then he was like had this crazy look on his face, and he was like, something's really wrong. And my mom kind of smelled it, and she was like, oh, there must have been like a bad egg or something in there. And she dumped it out. But I always remember that look on my older brother's face, and he still doesn't know that I was the one that pulled that off.
Is he going to listen to you now? Coming clean?
Well, my brother is GSM, actually. So we have the same. So we have to make sure that he, that's why he looks like me. Yeah, we have to make sure that he, That we'll both have a reason to make sure he doesn't hear the show.
If he asks, I have no idea why we called him GSM. How can people find out about you?
There's a couple websites that have all of my information on it. And that is actually something I was going to recommend to Joe or anyone starting a DIY enterprise, whether it's hot sauce or anything else. It's just having a really good website, you know, mm-hmm. makes a big difference.
Yeah.
So, the book, My Heart is an Idiot, it just came out in paperback. And it's like personal essays about my own misadventures and loving relationships. And also interesting people I've met over the last 10 years as I've been traveling around the country doing Found Magazine stuff. So there's an awesome website made by my friend Zach Gaynor in Seattle. He's a great web designer. And the site is myheartisanidiotbook.com. So if you go to that website, myheartisanidiotbook.com, there's an excerpt from the book. There's some videos, including one of my dad rapping about his favorite essay.
I saw that.
And there's a bunch of other great stuff about the book. So if people are curious, that's a great way to check out the book, myheartisanidiotbook.com. And then, of course, foundmagazine.com, we've had going for 12 years. It's all notes and letters that people find on the ground, find on the street, love letters, to-do lists, journal entries. Every day, we post a new favorite find on there, our favorite that we received the day before. So check out foundmagazine.com. And I'm on tour right now, going to about 10 more cities in the next week and a half. So we have, you know, Brooklyn, of course, our big event tomorrow night at Powerhouse Arena. Thursday's in Boston. Going on to Portland, Maine, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, San Francisco, and L.A. So, you know, let your friends know that we're headed their way. Foundmagazine.com, it's got all the event information and great finds. So I hope people listening will find stuff and send it to us.
Awesome. Davey. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me, Emily.
My first guest.
Oh, yeah.
You might be like a trivia question someday.
I hope so.
And let's see, I have to pose next week's question of the week so that people have a question to answer, which is, what is the best food item you've ever had? We've already done what your favorite meal was, and we got some really good responses, but I want to know the best food thing you've ever eaten. And if you have any more cooking questions for me,
yeah,
Davey, and the rest of you can tweet me at Chef Emily P, find me on Facebook /sharpandhot, or visit sharpandhot.com, which is a website that I designed myself, so any feedback would be appreciated.
Nice.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.